I'm Celeste Headlee. This is On Second Thought. April is Financial Literacy Month. The Great Recession revealed just how little the average American knows about their finances. Only 5% say they learned about money in school, and about 40% would give themselves a C or lower grade for their understanding of personal finance.
Want to see my report card? Think I did good?
Well, I guess you did better than I did. I never got any B's.
85% of Americans think we should teach about finances in high school. So, in the spirit of financial literacy, let's talk about something we hear a lot about, especially during election time, Social Security. It's something a lot of people talk about, but few people understand. So, it's time to break it down. Social Security is part of most people's retirement plan. Why is it important? Because there's a $6.6 trillion gap between what Americans have saved for retirement and what they'll probably need in order to retire in relative comfort. But the idea of saving money in anticipation of a time when you're no longer able to work is a fairly new concept. The ancient Greeks used to stockpile olive oil in clay pots in case of sickness or adversity. But for most of human history, old age meant you needed a younger person to take care of you, or you might get hosed.
Are you in need of any assistance today, sir?
No, I'm doing fine.
There were some very exclusive clubs that offered support for the needy and elderly, like the Freemasons and the Elks. Masons paid 25 cents each toward a fund to create a retirement center that housed poor members, their wives, widows, and orphans. And Civil War veterans could collect pensions from the government as well. But for most people, a comfortable retirement was out of reach. Until Black Tuesday. That's October 24th of 1929. And it's when the stock market crashed and the Great Depression began.
The tremendous crowds which you see gathered outside the stock exchange are due to the greatest crash in the history of the New York Stock Exchange in market prices.
It lasted 10 years. Unemployment was higher than 25% at times, and about 10,000 banks failed. So, Governor Huey Long of Louisiana proposed the Share the Wealth program. He wanted everyone over the age of 60 to collect a pension. By 1935, there were 7.7 million members in Share the Wealth clubs. The call for such a program was echoed by the popular preacher Charles Coughlin. At his peak, Father Coughlin's radio show had a larger audience than Howard Stern, Larry King, Rush Limbaugh, and Paul Harvey combined. Now, Coughlin was also an anti-Semite and racist, but he did help rally support for the idea of a social safety net.
With a dollar that is easily manipulated by the exploiters of labor, it is evident that higher wages mean nothing if they will not be able to purchase more of life's necessities.
But the Social Security program that we know today was modeled after the European system of social insurance. A large group of people put money into a pot that insures them against a defined risk, in this case, old age. Theodore Roosevelt was a big fan of the idea in the early 1900s, but it was Franklin Roosevelt that actually carried it out.
It proposes, by means of old age pensions, to help those who have reached the age of retirement to give up their jobs and thus give to the younger generation greater opportunities for work, and to give to all, old and young alike, a feeling of security as they look towards old age.
The Social Security Act was signed into law in August of 1935. It guaranteed most workers a decent income by the age of 65. Since then, the government has paid more than $7 trillion in benefits. The smallest check ever cut was 5 cents back in the late 1930s.
To take the ferry cost a nickel, and in those days, nickels had pictures of bumblebees on them. Give me 5 bees for a quarter, you'd say.
The program has been tweaked and updated since the 30s. It's been overhauled and revamped, but the core concept is still the same. Let's walk through a few of the myths surrounding Social Security, because there are a lot of them. Probably the biggest is that Social Security is going bankrupt. It is not.
Simple math says it all. The left primarily argues, well, no, Social Security isn't bankrupt. Look, bankrupt is when you can't pay your debts.
If no money is paid into the piggy bank, then the Social Security Trust Fund will be gone by 2033. But money is being paid into the system, and that will continue. So Social Security will not go broke. But unless Congress raises taxes or increases the retirement age to 70 years old, Social Security benefits will go down. A young person might collect only 75% of their expected benefits if Congress does not act.
Well, that's not fair.
I don't even know what that means.
Why does she get one and not me?
Because she's a separate person from you. You're never going to get the same things as other people. It's never going to be equal. It's not going to happen ever in your life. So you might as well learn that now, okay?
Another myth is that it's best to start collecting your benefits as early as you can. That's age 62. But the full retirement age is 67. You can start getting checks 5 years earlier, but your benefits go up by 8% for every year that you wait. Life expectancy for the average American is nearly 80, so you might want to be patient and get the bigger check when you most need it.
I used to be with it, but then they changed what it was. Now what I'm with isn't it, and what's it seems weird and scary to me.
Another myth dates back to the 1990s. It was debunked fairly quickly, but it still persists. Here's the claim. More young Americans believe in UFOs than think they will ever receive Social Security benefits.
There are alien forces acting in ways we can't perceive.
Nope, that's not true. Even back in the 90s, over 70% of young people had confidence in Social Security. Those young people are now in their 40s, like me. As of 2015, a Gallup poll found about half of Americans think they'll be able to collect Social Security, but only about a third expect it to be a major source of income after they retire. Those are the basics of Social Security. So for more detail, let's consult an expert. Joining me now is Mary Beth Franklin. She's contributing editor at Investment News and an expert on Social Security. Hi there.
Hi, Celeste. Thanks for having me on today.
Did we get everything right?
I think you had a great summation of the history of Social Security, but the important thing is to look forward and what can we expect?
Can we go back to those myths that I talked about and start with the one about Social Security going bankrupt? Why does that myth persist?
Well, because there is this widespread information that the Social Security Trust Fund will run out of money around 2033. But we have to back up and say, really, what does that mean? Every one of us who has a paycheck has something called FICA taxes, which stands for Federal Insurance Contribution Act, taken out of their paycheck every week that is earmarked for Social Security benefits. And in addition, over the past 30 years, Congress made sure that we were collecting more tax revenue than we needed immediately, knowing that 78 million baby boomers were going to start retiring around now. So that way, they've got money from the FICA taxes and the extra revenue that was in this, quote, trust fund. Well, over the next 10 to 15 years, we'll be drawing down that trust fund to the point that if Congress did nothing, the trust fund would dry up. But the FICA taxes would continue. And even if Congress did nothing, there would be enough FICA taxes to pay about 75% of promised benefits. Well, hey, no one is going to be satisfied with 75%. And I guarantee that Congress will do something because it's the most popular federal program in history. And more importantly, old people who get the benefits vote in higher percentages than other people.
Now, Social Security, though, although a lot of people end up relying only on Social Security, financial experts say it's not enough to actually let somebody retire in comfort. Isn't that correct?
Correct. It was never intended to be your sole form of retirement income. For a low-income worker who has low wages throughout his or her life, it would replace about 40% of their paycheck. For a higher income worker, it might replace 25% of your former paycheck. So you really need to do something on your own. In the past, many of our parents were lucky enough to have pensions from their employers. That's pretty much gone the way of the dinosaur at this point. So we are more personally responsible for our retirement, and that means funding your 401k plan, your 403b plan, your IRA, whatever you have access to, and the sooner the better.
All right, let's go back to what Congress can do or cannot do. I mentioned that they've considered raising the retirement age, but they've been bouncing that around for a really long time. What are the ideas on how to keep Social Security from decreasing benefits?
Basically, it will have to be a combination of some sort of revenue increase and some sort of benefit reduction. But let me give you an example. You mentioned that the full retirement age is 67. That really only applies to people who were born in 1960 or later, like you. I'm 61. My full retirement age is 66. This gradual increase in the full retirement age started back in 1983. We have gotten more than 30 years to get used to the idea that the full retirement age is going up. That 67 doesn't kick in until 2027. So when you make incremental changes and you give America a long time to get used to it, it's not so bad. So yes, Congress might increase the full retirement age to 70, but it would probably affect today's four-year-olds or younger. It's not going to affect you. The other
side, that doesn't solve the whole problem.
It would solve a large piece of the problem. But in Congress, you have people who hate benefits cuts, which tend to be Democrats. You hate people who hate tax increases, which tend to be Republicans. So basically, you have to do a little bit of both and tick off everybody equally. So what you will probably have is currently 7.65% of everyone's paycheck funds Social Security and Medicare, and an equal amount of that comes from your employer. So the combination is 15.3%. If you increase that tax by about 2% on both sides of the equation, you have completely wiped out that long-term deficit. I don't think you would do it all on the tax side. Maybe you would do a little bit on the tax side and gradually increase the full retirement age. The dangerous conversations are around something called means testing. You have some
means, M-E-A-N-S.
Correct. In other words, if you have a lot of money, you shouldn't get Social Security benefits. That flies in the face of the entire concept of Social Security, which was every worker and their employer contributes a small amount of their paycheck to a future retirement benefit. If you now say to people, except if you're too rich, you're not going to get anything, well, suddenly you have gone from a shared earned benefit to some sort of welfare for the elderly. That is really not what this system is all about. And I think if you have someone try to impose that concept, you'd get a lot of pushback. And Social Security, which is so powerful and popular because it's shared by all, would basically, it would be the ghettoization of Social Security. It would lose its clout.
So here's a question that I looked everywhere and could not find an answer to, Mary Beth. We just got news that millennials are now the largest generation of Americans. Now, when they discovered that the baby boomers was a huge number of people of all about the same age, Congress acted and they created the trust fund. So shouldn't we be preparing for the days at some point when the millennials grow older and are ready to retire?
Social Security, when you look at the demographics, it goes in waves. When Social Security was first created, there were 33 workers for every one retiree. Taxes were very low, benefits were low. Over the generations, we've now gotten to the point that there's only about two workers for every one retiree. That's why it's such a burden. But as the baby boomers die off, that's going to flip again. And there'll be plenty of workers for, you know, smaller groups of retirees. Congress just has to make a few minor tweaks to take care of these demographic changes. They come in waves. Social Security is a really simple mathematical fix.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mary Beth, but it sounds like what you're saying is after the generation of baby boomers, there's going to be a long period of time in which we're sort of refilling the coffers.
Correct.
And that will take care, if the Congress makes the changes that you've talked about, that will correct the trust fund problem.
For the foreseeable future, Social Security tends to look in 75-year increments, and they can tweak it as they go along. Few minor Social Security is now 80 years old. Couple minor tweaks, you're good for the next 75 years. And as times change and demographics change, a few other tweaks would keep it going.
Okay, so we only have about a minute and a half left, but can you speak to those people out there who don't think that they will ever collect any Social Security? Because there seems to be a good number of them.
You will definitely collect Social Security. It's a pay-to-play system. If you pay into the system, you're going to get benefits. But there are public workers in 15 states, some of whom are in Georgia, that do not pay into Social Security. They have a public retirement system. They won't get benefits. So, you know, if you are being taxed, you're going to get a benefit in the future. But the fact that your retirement age is a little higher than mine, it means your benefits will be worth a little less than mine. However, you're probably going to outlive me by 5 or 10 or 15 years. So in the long run, you're going to get more out of the system.
Because I'll be being paid for 5 or 10 years longer.
Exactly.
That is Mary Beth Franklin, clear as day. She is a contributing editor at Investment News. Mary Beth, thank you so much.
Happy to help.